Renunciation.
Siat
is possible.
Twaya,
by you. Kevalena Musha, possessing knowledge falsely. Manyase,
you think.
Yade,
if.
Upashamam, renunciation of material enjoyments.
Sneha
Pasha,
the
bonds of affection.
Nikrintanam,
cunning. So translation, Prajapati Daksha continued, if you think that simply awakening the sense of renunciation will detach one from the material world, I must say that unless full knowledge is awakened, simply changing dresses, as you have done, cannot possibly bring detachment. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Prajapati Daksha was correct in stating that changing one's dress cannot detach one from this material world. The sannyasis of Kali Yuga, who change their robes from white to saffron and then think they can do whatever they like, are more abominable than materialistic grahasthas. This is not recommended anywhere. Prajapati Daksha was right in pointing out this defect, but he did not know that Narada Muni had aroused the spirit of renunciation in the Hariyashvas and the Savalashvas through full knowledge. Such enlightened renunciation is desirable. One should enter the renounced order with full knowledge, jnana vairagya. For the perfection of life is possible for one who renounces this material world in that way. This elevated stage can be reached very easily, as supported by the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, Text 7. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Ajanayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Ohoi Tukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of God at Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. If one seriously engages in devotional service to Lord Vasudeva, jnana and vairagya are automatically manifest in one's person. There's no doubt of this. Prajapati Daksha's accusation that Narada had not actually elevated his sons to the platform of knowledge was not factual. All the sons of Prajapati Daksha had first been raised to the platform of jnana and had then automatically renounced this world. In summary, unless one's knowledge is awakened, renunciation cannot take place, for without elevated knowledge, one cannot give up attachment and material enjoyment. So the verse again. Netam pumsam viragasyat twaya kevalinamrsha manyase yadyupashanam snehapashanakrentanam. Dhamma gana timiranda sha gananjana shlakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shi gurve namaha. So of course this is the famous story of Narada Muni preaching to the two groups of sons of Prajapati Daksha, the Hariyashvas and the Savalashvas. And the first group was 10,000 and the second group was only 1,000. So Daksha's called a Prajapati. Pati means master and Praja means of those who were born. In other words, someone who is a master of having children. In other words, just like if you go to the university, you get a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. And also a PhD. So he had a master's degree in having children. So he was one of the, that's not necessarily bad, because there are many Prajapatis in addition to Daksha. I mean, in one sense you can say even Lord Brahma is a Prajapati, because he populated the whole universe with his children and the grandchildren like that. I mean, there's whole stories about that in the Bhagavatam. But the thing is that Prajapati Daksha was attached to enjoying his children. There's a difference. If one's attached to making their children Krishna conscious, that's wonderful. But if one is attached to enjoying the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren, you never get out of the material entanglement. It's like we speak to many devotees. They say, oh, yes, and when my children grow up, then I'll be able to serve Krishna full time. But then what happens? Their children grow up and their children have children. That naturally happens. And then they spend all their time, or most of their time, visiting the grandchildren. And the interesting thing about grandchildren, usually there's more grandchildren than children, because it expands exponentially. You don't understand exponentially. Let's say you have two children, and each of those two children gets married. So each of those two children has two children. Of course, traditionally people have many more children than that. I'm sure that in West Bengal, the people, when they lived in the villages, they would have like 6, 7, 8 children. Because it's actually productive to have more children, because more children means you get more health. In the city, having children is an expensive hobby. Because it's calculated in America that if you want to raise a child, send them to the university and everything like that, it's between $500,000 and $1 million for each child. Pretty expensive, isn't it? But in the village, if you have a child helps you with your work, your agriculture, and helps take care of the younger children, and it's kind of nice to have a lot of children. But in the city, it's so expensive. Just like if you send your child to a private school. Any of the devotees send their children to private schools here? I'm sure some of them do. And it's very expensive. Thousands of dollars every month they spending. So, mobile phones. One of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. So then if one has 10 children, and each of those 10 children has 10 children, then you've got 100 grandchildren. And each of those 100 grandchildren gets married, and each one of them has 10 children, then you have 1,000 great-grandchildren. And so you could spend all your time picking up the little babies, right? Like many of you have children here. Picking up the little babies and kissing them and blessing them and everything like that. And even the sannyasis in Kali Yuga, you know, what I experienced is that, you know, I have, you know, so many disciples, and each of those disciples gets married and they have children, so I have to go around blessing all the children. I've done so many grain ceremonies I can't even count. You understand the grain ceremony, all these different samskaras, and you know that in Kali Yuga they ask the sannyasis to do the marriage ceremony, vivaha yagya. They ask the sannyasis to do the name giving ceremony and give the name. They ask the sannyasis to do the grain ceremony and also the ceremony where they choose what their propensities will be. Then they ask the sannyasis to do the chalk ceremony before they go to school.
Yeah.
And then they ask the sannyasis to do the graduation ceremony, to be there at the graduation. Then they ask the sannyasis to be there at the marriage of their kids. Then they ask the sannyasis to be there at the death. So in Kali Yuga, the sannyasis get more entangled in the grahasa, especially if they have disciples, because then they're running around with all these children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. It's hard to keep track of all these things. So anyway, Prajapati said the sannyasis are actually in Kali Yuga, they're Prajapati, especially the gurus. They're like Prajapatis. So anyway, but at least they're engaging in Krishna service. So the point is that there's a lot of attachment that's there. A lot of attachment that's there in, you know, children and grandchildren. So getting back to the point is, Daksha was very attached to this. He wanted to see his grandchildren. And so then he was completely frustrated, you know, Jayato Bhishakam Sang Sangostesha Bhajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Vrota Bhajayate. So he was meditating as he's sending his children off to engage in austerity so they can get married later on. He was meditating on how later on he would enjoy. Not only, he wasn't thinking of so much of the service to Krishna. I mean, he was a great devotee. He's a devotee too, because he actually saw Lord Vishnu. But he was thinking, how much will I enjoy these children when they grow up and have grandchildren and great-grandchildren? Wow. You know, he was thinking like that. So Nardamuni frustrated his desires. And when his desires were frustrated, he got angry. And then he committed offenses against Nardamuni. And you see, later on, he'll commit offenses against, you know, Lord, against the demigod, I mean against Lord Shiva. I mean, so many offenses he commits because of his attachments. So he had these two groups of sons, both of them took sannyas. Then he decided to have daughters. Because he thought, well, at least I can enjoy my grandchildren if I have daughters, because the daughters will not take sannyas. And that worked. That strategy worked, as we'll find out later on. That he was able to have daughters, there were 10 of them. And then he got them married to various other Prajapatis, and then he enjoyed family life in this way. So that's why Daksha is quite angry with Narada Muni. Now, what Daksha is saying, in one sense, as Srila Prabhupada said, is right. One has to have transcendental knowledge and realize knowledge, jnana and vijnana. Vijnana means practiced or realized knowledge, in order to be detached from this material world. Because if one doesn't have that, one sannyas will simply be a show bottle. Like Srila Prabhupada gave the example of one of his neighbors when Prabhupada was a grihastha, one of his neighbors who lived right next to him, in the flat right next to him, would dress as a sannyasi during the day, go out and collect money that's what the upper cloth of the sannyasi is meant for. Not for collecting money, for grains, actually. Grains and fruits and everything. But nowadays in Kali Yuga, it's for money. Isn't it? Traditionally, it's not that people would be throwing gold into a sannyasi's upper garment. They'd be throwing grains, fruits, vegetables, you know, the necessities of life. Because the sannyasis didn't need money in Kali Yuga, and in the previous Yuga. Kali Yuga, of course, they need money. Because they have to travel in airplanes, they have to buy cell phones, they have to get computers. So in Kali Yuga, you give sannyasis money. In previous Yuga, you gave them fruit. So this person, he was going out and begging all day long for money. And then at night, he would turn all the money over to his wife. And then he would dress in a white dhoti after that. So Prabhupada talked about this particular individual, how this is cheating going on in the name of the renounced order. And so this is a really gross example. But you actually see this going on perhaps in subtle ways. Where someone may be in the renounced order, I'm not saying it happens in ISKCON, but I've seen it in other cases, and they're simply looking after enjoying life, either by eating very opulent food, or by, you know, associating with women, or buying fine clothes or expensive watches. You know, people look, oh, this is an Omega. It's not. This is a Casio. This is a cheap Casio watch. So I remember in the early days when, after Prabhupada left the movement, the sannyasis, they would go around and look at each other's watches. I said, what type of watch do you have? Oh, I have a Rolex. The $10,000 Rolex. Actually, one time someone gave me an expensive Rolex. You know what I did with it? I sold it. Gave the money to ISKCON. What am I going to walk around with a Rolex for? So you see that sometimes that, you know, in the renowned story, there may be that tendency because there's naturally people give things to someone in the renowned order. And it's actually quite dangerous that one can become enamored. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked by Raghunath Das Goswami, what are the duties of someone of the renounced order of life? And Raghunath Das Goswami presented this this question to Swarup Damodar Goswami. Swarup Damodar Goswami was the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Swarup Damodar Goswami was the Siksha Guru of Raghunath Das Goswami. So Lord Chaitanya said, now that you're in the renounced order of life, don't think of women, even in dreams. Even in dreams, you're not allowed to think of women. That's pretty good, isn't it? And that includes Bollywood movies, too. Nowadays, they'd have to be the instruction, don't watch Bollywood movies. Don't think of women even in dreams. Don't wear fine clothing. And, you know, which means like jewelry and everything like that, and opulent clothes. I mean, it has to be some sort of clothes. You can't just dress in rags and color even. And don't eat opulent foodstuffs. And Lord Chaitanya said, someone who runs here and there trying to taste opulent foods that can never attain the mercy of Krishna. And then you see how strict Lord Chaitanya dealt with Junior Haridas, right? I mean, Junior Haridas, practically speaking, it's hard to figure out what he did wrong. I mean, if you read him, he talked him out of it, you know, some old lady, and he begged some rice from her. I mean, this is, basically he did that. And of course, some of the acharyas say that he also looked at a young girl with lust too. I mean, there's other explanations of that too. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, I don't want to see his face. I don't want to see someone who talks with women in a secluded place. And so Junior Haridas basically was excluded from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association because Lord Chaitanya wanted to show the strictest standard for sannyas life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Strictest standard. And Lord Chaitanya understood that if his associates were loose with women or in any other way, then people would take advantage, and then you'd have sannyasis later on who were just like Dari sannyasis. I mean, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, and of course Junior Haridas eventually entered into the Ganges of the Trivani and left his body, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself wouldn't even accept a bed. There's that story of Jagannanda Pandit, you know, Jagannanda Pandit, who was Satchabhama and Krishna Lila. He wanted to give Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a nice mattress to lie on, because Lord Chaitanya was lying in the Gambira on the floor, you know, on concrete. And concrete is pretty bad, pretty cold. Just like this morning you had the temperature all the way down. It was like the walk-in refrigerator from Uncle Artie. Did you notice that? I mean, I just think I should have brought my winter coat when I came here to New Orleans. So, but Lord Chaitanya was and actually concrete takes away your energy, or marble when you sit on it, just like most of you are sitting on some cushion here. So if you actually sit on it, it can affect the kidneys and everything. So Lord Chaitanya was sleeping on this concrete stuff in the Gambira. And Jagannanda Pandit thought, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shouldn't have to sleep on the floor, let's make him a mattress. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to take that. Eventually, Swarup Damodar took some of the old dhotis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and put some ripped up banana leaves inside it to give him a little bit of a cushion. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused. And then you have the story when Jagannanda Pandit brought Chaitanya Mahaprabhu this sandalwood oil. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, I can't use it. People are going to think I'm a Dari sannyasi. Dari sannyasi is one of a sannyasi that keeps women. That's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Jagannanda Pandit got so angry that he smashed the sandalwood. He said, who told you I brought sandalwood? And he just smashed it on the steps. And that all that sandalwood was lost. And Lord Chaitanya had previously given him the instruction to use the sandalwood for Lord Jagannath's service. But, you know, Lord Chaitanya refused. He said, you know, people will criticize me. Of course, Lord Nityananda did dress opulently, and he didn't have a lot of jewelry on him. The reason he did that is because he wanted people to try to steal from him so he could give them mercy. Did you know that? There's that story that Lord Nityananda, he had all this jewelry and, you know, gold and diamonds and everything like that, and the dacoits became very attractive. And for 3 nights they attempted to steal from Lord Nityananda. You know, the first night they fell asleep. Second night they saw the big Vaikuntha guards chanting Hare Krishna. And the third night there was like rain and hail and pus coming from the sky and they became blinded. The story's in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. And eventually they took shelter of Lord Nityananda. So even Lord Nityananda, where he, when he wore jewelry, was actually a means of attracting dacoits. So we don't want to do that. I mean, for example, like when we go to India and go around Govardhan, we don't, because I don't have any jewelry, but we don't have anything expensive in our pockets, because the dacoits get attracted to that. And Sanatana Goswami also, there's that story when he was escaping from prison, his servant Ishan had 8 gold coins, and he almost got killed because of that. And he had his servant give away the gold coins, and the servant kept one of them, actually. And he rejected his servant just because his servant was keeping these gold coins. I mean, it's very interesting examples about what it means to be in the renounced order of life. And then, of course, you have Raghunath Das Goswami, who was so renounced it was frightening, that he was first begging food from the at the Singhadwara gate in Jagannath Puri, and then going to the free food distribution place, and then even eating the rice that was rejected, was thrown out of the kitchen. Actually, when I went to Jagannath Puri, I walked by the kitchen and saw where the rice was. Did you ever go and see where that rice is? It's right outside the kitchen of Jagannath. It's outside the temple, because they won't let me in the temple, because they don't think I'm a devotee. So, somehow, even I tried to bribe my way in, they wouldn't let me in. Didn't work. So anyway, so you can walk outside the kitchen and there's this whole pile of rejected rice and it smells really bad because it's rotted.
Yeah.
You know, it's rice and it's rotted. And so Raghunath Das Goswami, ultimately, he was taking some of that rice, washing it with water, putting a little salt on it, and eating it. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appreciated it so much that he took some himself. He forcibly took some. He said, why are you keeping all this nice prasadam for yourself? And then Swarup Damodar Goswami prohibited him from taking more. He held his hand. That's almost like the story of the Sudama Brahmin. He offered Krishna some chip rice. And then Rukmini said, no, don't take any more. So you see, it's a very similar type of pastime that occurred with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you have, in other words, you have all these examples of extreme, Lord Chaitanya demanding extreme renunciation of those in the renounced order of life. Prabhupada was a little more lenient, because if Prabhupada wasn't lenient, the rest of us would have to be jumping in the Tribeni continually. So even there was one disciple of Prabhupada who heard the story of Junior Haridas and he committed suicide because he had interacted. Nobody knows exactly what happened in the story. His name was Vishnu Jan Maharaj. And he had interacted somehow or other inappropriately with a woman. I don't know what it was. But he jumped in the Tribeni. And Prabhupada actually said, no, the devotee shouldn't do that. Prabhupada was actually, in one sense, manifested more mercy than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because the devotee is more merciful than the Lord himself. So when sannyasi somehow or other did something wrong, Prabhupada engaged them as householders. You know, even though that's prohibited, because for a sannyasi to again enter into the household life is called vipungsi, which means eating your own vomit. Means vomiting out and eating it. Can you imagine that? Even if I think about it, I get sick. Sometimes I've been in an airplane and someone regurgitates, vomits. And I just I get so sick, it's unbelievable. I can't breathe anymore. I mean, it's really bad. So imagine eating your own vomit. But Prabhupada was so merciful like that. And in the beginning days of the movement, Prabhupada did make sannyasis very easily. But as you see, most of those sannyasis didn't make it. They had problems. But Prabhupada had to do that because it was an emergency situation to spread the movement. If Prabhupada hadn't done that, it's called deputizing people. If Prabhupada hadn't done that, the movement would have never been spread. It's like the Battle of Kurukshetra, basically. Before the battle, Krishna understood, and even Draupadi knew that her sons would die and Abhimanyu would die. Did you know that? Draupadi knew this. She knew also. She knew also. She decided to make that great sacrifice for Dharma. So, I mean, sometimes you find that, and because there's a higher principle.
Wait, that story was?
The Mahabharata. What?
Mahabharata?
Yeah. Draupadi was intelligent. She was Krishna's friend. Krishna actually called her Sakhi.
Yeah, Sakhi, yeah.
And then, she called Krishna Sakhar. So they were actually friends, not boyfriends and girlfriends like that, like you have in the West, which is abominable. But they were friends. They were very close. And therefore she was called Krishna. She had the same complexion as Krishna. And she was Krishna's dearmost friend. And so anyway, so Krishna, he knew what was going to happen, Draupadi knew what was going to happen, and they decided to make the sacrifice for the higher principle. So Prabhupada understood that most of the people he gave sannyas to weren't going to be able to make it. But there was a higher principle spreading Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada had 11 years before he left this world. He came to America in 65 and the preaching started in 1966. So that's, Prabhupada left the world in 77, so that's 11 years basically. And then even less because, you know, when Prabhupada was sick then he wasn't able to travel. So it's even less than 11 years of active preaching. And imagine what Prabhupada did, let's say 10 years of active preaching. So Prabhupada really had to just do emergency things. Nowadays in the movement, if someone takes sannyas or wants to take sannyas, there's a lot of assessment of the person. And the whole GBC votes on it. And the person has to have, you know, at least Bhakti Shastri degrees and other degrees like this. And he has to have the approval of so many other people in the movement. And then he's put on a 5-year waiting list. And then it goes to 4, then it goes to 3. But if he's not, if there's some question, then you keep him on the 3-year. Someone could be on a 3-year of the 5-year waiting list for 4 years. Because there's, when we're careful. Because it's very important, because the sannyasi is like a white sheet. You know, if there's a little spot on the white sheet, you actually see the spot. Immediately, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described it like this too. So one has to be very, very careful. So another point being mentioned here is how to become detached. And the answer is you can't become detached by just trying to become detached. For example, even the word sannyas is actually two words. It's sun and yas. Yas means to give up. Like traditionally the Mayavadis, they're, in one sense they're not sannyasis, they're nyasis. I mean, in a direct literal sense, they're nyasis. Nyasi means just giving up. They just give up. But they have nothing higher. They have no practical engagement. So it's just nyasi. Whereas sannyasi means with or connecting or doing something, service. Implicitly it means the sun, like you have sankirtan, right? Sankirtan means chanting congregationally or with other people. Or else it means complete complete chanting of the holy names of Krishna. So in the same way, the word sannyas means to give up the material world and to engage in Krishna's service simultaneously. That's the meaning of the word sannyas. Otherwise it would just be nyas, or nyasi, referring to the person who is a renunciate. So, as it's stated, as Prabhupada quotes this very nice verse here in the purport, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Jinayati Ashum Vairagyam Jnanam Chayada Hoitukam. That when one performs devotional service for Krishna, one gets a higher taste, and at a particular point, you get Vairagya. That means, Vairagya means disinterested in passion. Ragya, Raj, is passion. So one becomes free of passion. What is passion? The desire to enjoy different things in this material world. But that only happens at a certain stage. It's not that immediately after you join the Krishna conscious movement you become renounced. You have to come to the stage of basically understanding that you have a spiritual identity different from this material identity. Because as long as you're identifying yourself as this body, then you're going to be thinking the goal of life is to enjoy the body. So unless you actually have a spiritual identity, and a spiritual identity means beginning with the identity that you're a servant of, as we mentioned yesterday, servant of Srila Prabhupada. And then, in addition to that, a servant of Krishna, Gopi Bharata, Padakamala, Dasa, Dasa, Dasana, Dasa. And then it becomes more specific as you advance in devotional service, come to the Raghunuga platform, you become attracted to serving Radha and Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in very specific ways. You become attracted to serving under the guidance, this is called Raghunuga Bhakti, under the guidance of a particular resident, eternal resident of Vrindavan and Mayapur. And then you enter the stage of Bhava, and then you come to the stage of Prema. But unless one is convinced of their spiritual identity, then there's no question of renunciation of this world, absolute renunciation of this world. There's still a tendency towards attachment. Attachment and problems. So one has to be very careful. one has to be very, very careful, especially if you're in the renounced order of life or you're brahmachari, of interacting with the sense objects. If you realize your spiritual identity, which very few of us have, then you can be like Ramananda Roy. You know, Ramananda Roy was able to teach the dancing girls, the Devi Dasis, how to dance. And Lord Chaitanya said that Lord Chaitanya, taking our position, of course Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, he said even he wasn't able to do that. He said even if he saw a wooden statue of a woman, that there'd be some disturbance. But Ramananda Roy was able to decorate the bodies of these very beautiful young girls and touch their bodies. Isn't it? The story's there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, it's an amazing story. And he did not feel the least bit of agitation because he understood fully his spiritual identity. Of course, he is Vishakha in Krishna's pastimes. Also Arjuna. It's like a combined incarnation of Arjuna. Sometimes it's described as Arjuna, sometimes as Vishakha. It's quite interesting how many of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are described as combined incarnations. Like Haridasa Thakur is Lord Brahma, and he's also Prahlad Maharaj. Did you know that?
No.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you're Prahlad Maharaj. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur states he's an incarnation of Lord Brahma. And there's that whole story that Lord Brahma, he made a big mistake when he stole the calves and coward boys. And as a result of that, he went, this is the Navadvip Adam Mahatmya. Anyone read that book?
Yeah. I did.
You read it? That he went to atone, he went to Navadvip to atone. And then Lord Gauranga told him that your atonement is that you're going to be taking birth as in the Malacha family, in a Yavana family, like a Muslim family. You understand that? In the Yavana family. And then you're going to be the teacher of the holy names. So we have Haridasa Thakur, who's a combined incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Brahma, according to the Acharyas. So in the same way that Vishakha appeared as Ramananda Roy and also Arjuna. It's interesting, the combination. I mean, if you read Kavi Karnapur's Garg on the Dashtipika, you read that?
Yeah.
It describes who was who in Krishna's Leela. So anyway, so Ramananda Roy, being Vishakha, was able to deal with this and had absolute detachment. But we cannot imitate. So we should be very, very careful about these things. So anyway, so these are some of the points. So any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Anyone want to take some? Yes.
Prasya, I said, like, the saying that Ramananda Roy, he was ruling the state in South India.
Yeah, Chennai.
And yeah, that's why like as you said, like he's a Arjuna. In that way, he is acting like, you know.
Right, Kshatriya.
And when he became to touch with the initiation, association with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he became that Vishakha Shakti.
Yes, that's true. I mean, he was expert administrator.
Yeah.
But when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met him, Lord Chaitanya told him to renounce his administration job, and King Prataparuja gave him a stipend. In other words, gave him a salary, even though he wasn't working anymore. And that actually it's described that Bhavananda Roy, who's the father of Bhavananda Roy, Jayashishanda, is Pandu. You understand? Pandu. Bhavananda Roy is an incarnate. Bhavananda Roy. I have to pronounce it properly. Bhavananda. I've used my Bengali accent. Bhavananda Roy. Right? That's how you pronounce it. Instead of Sanskrit, I have to speak in Bengali here. So anyway, so Bhavananda Roy was Pandu. And his five children are the Pandavas, like Gopinath Patanayaka and others, who were he had children, and Ramananda Roy was one of those children. You know the whole story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how Gopinath Patanayaka was going to be killed by the king's son, and then Lord Chaitanya saved him. Anyway, this is a wonderful story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So somehow or other, he's Vishakha and Arjuna. Thank you for the explanation. Because he was expert administrator.
Yeah.
Lord Chaitanya met him along the banks of the Godavari River. And in a place called Rajamundari. Anyone here been to Rajamundari? No. I've been to more places than any of you. I thought you're supposed to be Don Vasis. I've been to Rama. We actually have a beautiful temple in Rajamundri. A beautiful Radha Krishna temple, and it's on the second floor, and it's a big temple right on the banks of the Godavari. And the temple is actually high, because I guess it's a floodplain there. You know, the Godavari floods sometimes. And all the incarnations of the Lord are there, and there's a walkway around the second floor of the temple, and there's little temples with little coverings around on the outside with all the incarnation, the Dashavataras of the Lord. It's a very beautiful temple. We spent some time there in giving class. I traveled all over India following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footsteps. None of you have done that. You should do that someday. That's a real book. No, I mean, stay here until you're about 80 and then you can do that. Because we follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footsteps in South India.
Yeah.
Different places, you know. Tirupati he went to, and Mangalgiri, Singhachalam. We went to Hovalam, Tirupati, Srirangam, all these different places in South India. We used to take devotees on tours. I knew so much about all these places that I actually would rent a bus from Mayapur, and we'd take the bus driver didn't know where we were going, so I had to guide him. I had to sit up front with the bus driver and tell him where to turn, because they didn't know. I mean, from Bengal, they don't know where to go in South India.
Yeah.
So I said, turn here, turn there. And sometimes the police would stop us and say, you can't go down that road. And I said, just bribe him a little bit, and they'll let us go down the road. And it worked all the time.
Yeah.
100 rupees. But I told all the devotees, at least the Western devotees had to hide, because if they saw Western devotees, they'd ask for more money.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I said, everybody, go down under your seat. So we had a lot of nice experiences touring South India. Now I'll just spend time in Braj when I go to India. Braj and, of course, Mayapur. I'm Tirupati for meetings, but right now, since I've gone everywhere, I'm just happy to be in Braj. Like Prabhupada said, Braj is our home, Mayapur is the place where we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, any other questions? Yeah.
And who was the Vasudev Das Siddhartha?
Who was Vasudev Datta? That's an interesting question. I don't remember.
I thought it was, he was the Prabhupada Maharaj. Wasn't he?
I don't remember. Maybe someone, I can look that up today in the Gauranga Dipika and let you know. Because he's definitely mentioned in the Gauranga Dipika. However, I just don't remember right now. But he was someone in Krishna Leela, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously. He might also be considered in partial incarnation Prahlad Maharaj. Because you can have two or three devotees who are, I mean, it gets complicated and it's hard for us to understand, you know, how someone can be a combined incarnation or two people can be incarnations. It's just, you know, it gets very esoteric. And sometimes you have empowered incarnations. You know, when you're talking about a devotee, like Prabhupada one time said that to one devotee that that you're an incarnation of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was empowering this particular individual. It's not that he was directly Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So that's the type of incarnation. Like Lord Chaitanya, like Prabhupada is a Shaktivesh avatar. You know, he's an empowered personality. Krishna has empowered him. He's not Krishna. But he's empowered by Krishna. That's why we say Shaksha Vadi Twaina Samasa Shastra Utastata Bhavyata Eva Shukti. That because he's very dear, he's treated non different to the Supreme, very dear to the Lord. So yeah, I can look that up today. There's no problem. With a computer, you can look up all these things very quickly. Mm-hmm. Previously, it would take like a week to figure that out. Yes?
There are differences of opinion in the Gauranga Dipika about
yes.
Who's who. So it's interesting, like, how are these things calculated? I mean, even in more modern times, just, I don't know who calculated, but it's been calculated that Bhakti Siddhanta was so-and-so. I think Prabhupada accepted.
Prabhupada never stated who he was. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually stated who he was. He was, what was it, Kamala Mandri, I think. Oh, that was Bhakti Vinod Thakur. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, I forget exactly who he was in Krishna Leela, but he told people who he was. He actually came up and he said, you know, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur also revealed in many of his books who he was in Krishna Leela. Now, the question you raise is very interesting. Like in the Gauranga Dipika, there are certain controversial things. But there are other books that came out later that are pure speculation. Like you have this one book several books. Let's mention one called Advaita Prakash. You've heard about that book before? And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that's a modern invention, simply speculation, has improper philosophy in it. So there's a lot of these books that devotees read that have been published in ISKCON that were rejected by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to talk about this. So it's important to read the works of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to see which books are bona fide. Because many of the modern literatures like Advaita Prakash, which is actually, I've read Advaita Prakash and I've read a lot of them, until I found out what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said about them then. I was reading them. But then he talks about how they have philosophical deviations in them. So we have to be careful which book we're taking reference from. As far as the associates of Lord Chaitanya, a lot of that information that Kavi Karnapur gave came from Murari Gupta's diary. Because Lord Chaitanya actually said, for example, Lord Chaitanya actually said, and that's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Haridas Thakur is like Prahlad Maharaj. You know, he actually said that. And he actually said that Bhavananda Roy is the... Bhavananda Roy. Is, you know, I gotta get my Bengali accent properly. It sounds alright?
Yeah.
That's always like Prabhupada talk. Bhavananda Roy is Pandit. Lord Chaitanya said that. And he said the five sons of Balabhadra Roy were the Pandavas. So, I mean, that we have direct information from in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Well, there is a lot of speculation, and we have to be careful about putting forth speculation. There's an interesting book that just came out about Haridas Thakur that deals with Haridas Thakur's pastimes. It was written by Rupa Vilas. I don't know if you've seen that book. I mean, it's a very nice book. Very, very nice book.
And what is that?
Well, it's Haridas Thakur. I don't know what the... You know, it's about Haridas Thakur. I don't remember the name precisely. But the book's available... I mean, they have the book in New Taliban. And the book's also available on the internet as an e-book. E-book means books that you download from the internet and you can read it. Because I don't carry around books anymore because too heavy.
Yeah.
So all my books are e-books. I have a big library, thousands of Vaishnava books in my computer. So it's it.
Nowadays you can have in the phone also.
In the phone also. Yeah, my phone also. This is my phone. I also have books there. That's why I got a big phone.
Kind of bad.
This is called a note. This phone, so it's big, and it's big enough to read. So when I'm on an airplane, I can read the books.
Yeah.
And I also have the Mahabharata in there. I can watch the Mahabharata movie. There's a new Mahabharata movie. It's very nice.
Yeah.
But Star TV just put it out. Yes. Very good special effects and everything.
Yeah.
I recommend. I mean, they change the stories a little bit.
Yeah.
But the acting is very good.
I saw that.
You saw that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a serial. Every day they're coming out with another portion of it. And it's in Hindi. So, because I know enough Hindi to understand it, so I can understand it.
Do you have an English subscriber?
Subtitles?
Yeah, something.
I think they may have that, but the one on YouTube is all in Hindi.
Yeah.
Eventually they'll come out with a DVD set and everything like that. But the one on YouTube is all in Hindi. It's a very easy Hindi to understand. It's shoot Hindi, so it's not like village Hindi. Village Hindi is impossible for you to understand. You know, Rajabas, you know. But shoot Hindi is very clear. I mean, it's almost like Sanskrit, so it's...
Very similar.
Very similar, so it's very easy to understand that sort of Hindi. There's so many different types of Hindi, anyway. Okay. Yo, one more question.
You are saying that Draupadi knew her five sons going to be died.
Yeah, and Abhimanyu also.
Abhimanyu. So we know that Abhimanyu is an incarnation of sun god. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Whatever the relationship with that...
Karna.
Yeah, the five... No, five sons. They have previous lives.
Yeah. There's description in the Mahabharata. I mean, it's elaborate. I don't remember all those details.
No, like the five sons, maybe in previous life, there's some.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's there in the Mahabharata.
That's what they need to be, liberation,
Yeah, yeah. That it was planned by Krishna.
Yeah.
Draupadi knew because Krishna actually said, this is very interesting. Draupadi was intelligent. Krishna actually said that it was Abhimanyu's son that would become the next king.
Oh, okay.
So, hearing that, you can understand, then why didn't Abhimanyu become the next king?
Yeah.
Or why didn't the five Pandavas' sons become the next king? I mean, what's wrong? You know, so if one's a little intelligent,
so that's it.
You can just understand it by deduction, by logic, that if Abhimanyu's son becomes the next king, that means that everybody else is going to die. All the other children will die. And that's heavy. I mean, can you imagine Draupadi's pain seeing all of her sons die? And of course, Subhadra.
Yeah.
Like that, seeing her son die. And Arjuna seeing his sons die. And of course, Bhimsen seeing Gatakats die.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just... Can you imagine the pain they experience? I mean, because the parents are extremely attached to children. A mother's love is pure, almost pure love. So imagine seeing her children slaughtered in a few days. And even the five sons of the Pandavas were killed when they were sleeping.
Yeah.
right? Ashwatthama killed him. And that's not even a heroic way to die. To die in your, you know, he killed them while they were sleeping. Could you imagine? Poor Draupadi. What she had to go through, that he attempted disrobing, and then finally, you know, she gets her revenge, and Dushyant's chest is ripped open, and she gets the blood on her hair, and then her sons die. I mean, it's intense for a woman, you know.
Yeah.
You know, a man can just go, Hare Krishna. Krishna's mercy. But the women can't do that. So, you know, Draupadi was in intense pain throughout the whole. She made the ultimate sacrifice, sacrificing her children for Dharma. Okay, we better end. We don't want to sacrifice prasadam.